in this episode of the UniConnect podcast, we touch on some elements that are potentially triggering to some people who are listening to the episode. So just a little bit of a warning before we head on in. Hello and welcome to this month's episode of the Go Higher West Yorkshire UniConnect podcast. Me and Leanne are back here again this month to talk about another subject. Hello, Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be back.
This time around, myself and Leanne are at the University of Bradford, another of our partner institutions. And today we're going to be talking about students with additional needs who may be looking at progressing onto higher education. There's lots of different types of support that these students can access and may not know about. Luckily, we're joined by Paola, who works on the Disability Advice Team. Hello, Paola, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Jake, Leanne.
Hi.
Max.
Hi. We've got everyone's names.
Yes. Well done. That's a challenge in itself.
That's the test.
You passed the first test of the podcast.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm glad it's a nice day outside. Everyone's smiling, so positivity.
It has a big impact, doesn't it?
It does, definitely.
Just to start the podcast, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your role, how long you've been doing your role and what that sort of entails?
Yep, definitely. I work within Disability Advice as a disability advisor. Been here about 18 months now. I have seen the service change and evolve already in this time, which is really good. In terms of me contextually, I've worked in FE for a long, long time. In additional needs, SEN, however you want to term it, for the last 16, 17 years, really.
Wow.
So I'm hoping I still evolve and change.
Yeah.
And I'm not stuck in my ways. We'll see after this podcast, won't we?
We'll look at the comments afterwards.
Yeah.
No, we avoid those. So in terms of, like, obviously 17 years experience, it's a long time, so... I assume there's a lot of students that you've worked with in that time.
Yeah, in terms of the physical side, in terms of visual impairments, in terms of hearing, there's also the neurodiversity, specific learning difficulties, that quite a vast, wide range of individuals I've worked with who do fall under the umbrella of disability.
Yeah.
Potentially the word disability can scare people, but it's just a term that's used to define that term more than anything else, as were the Equality Act, and really universities do stick to the Equality Act.
Mm-hmm.
So the term is disability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool, because obviously, like you've just said there, there's so many different types of sort of disabilities that come under that umbrella.
Mm.
And so I guess you're sort of trained and sort of prepared to deal with anyone that may come to you with any sort of...
In terms of at university as well, the general rule of thumb is to, when we're looking at an individual on a case-by-case basis, it is the individual, individual-led, that student, their needs, and how does it impact on them.
Yeah.
In terms of if anyone feels that they're not too sure if they meet that criteria, when we are looking, we're looking at a sustained difficulty that would impact everyone on a day-to-day basis, really. So I often hear the word, oh, they're just dyslexic, but we forget about the impact that those difficulties will have on that person in any given day. When we look at environmental factors thrown at them, what is stressful in their life, what's thrown at them, how does it impact them, and that's what would then we'd look at that individual. So it's never just we would take that out. It's the individual and how it impacts them. And you've got to be intuitive. You've got to understand the difficulties, because it can be hard to talk about it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd meet with the individual and we talk to them, and then we'll work out a plan of action more than anything else.
So it's very individual. It's what works best for that individual person.
Yeah, absolutely. And what an individual might have had at a previous institution at school or at college won't necessarily be the same at university.
Yeah.
When someone comes to university, the government see that person as an adult. The minute you turn 18, you are an adult and you're expected to do everything yourself.
Mm.
So it becomes quite difficult, especially when someone might have had support from family, extended family, carers. So we're here to guide them through that process, explain it to them, navigate it, make it less scary, and make it more accessible. because they come to university to have fun, not to be defined by a disability, not to be held back. Yeah. You want to enjoy this experience. You want to enjoy the academic side. Yeah. And that is just part of your package that will come with you.
Yeah, it really sounds like what you guys do is basically to try and provide support and help.
Absolutely.
So what is the best way for students who feel like they might benefit from that to find you, or how do you find them?
So open days are always a good one. Mm-hmm. Disability advice or disability service, pretty much the same at any institution. You'll see a big sign, there'll be a team there. Email. Mm-hmm. You can just email us, ring us, and just get in touch. Sooner the better, really. Just so that you get everything in place, or you know the process, you know what you need to do, you know how to navigate things. And then websites like www.gov.uk will tell you all about disabled student allowance, and we can help navigate you through that process, because it can become confusing at times.
Yeah. So you said it obviously helps to reach out as soon as possible.
Yeah, ideally.
Yes.
But so, it's never too late.
No, you're right, definitely. Yeah. So would it be helpful for someone to declare that kind of thing when they fill out their UCAS application?
It can be a scary process. The word declare in itself can be quite scary. I prefer to say share.
Share.
Yeah, just have that open conversation. UCAS, it will be on UCAS. If you don't want to share it on UCAS, that doesn't matter. You can do it at admission. Mm. You can do it when you've already arrived. It's just, for us to be able to support you, we need to have some information to be able to do that, really. I often find once you've met someone on an open day, you've met with the team, you've had that open conversation, you're more likely to feel comfortable at sharing after that point. So definitely, open days, applicant days are really a useful experience, not only to meet individuals on the course, but it's to see the wider services and what the university can provide for you in terms of those additional needs that you might have.
Mm.
So, yeah, apply, do it at UCAS, but there's other stages. It's never too late to share.
Definitely.
I think something that maybe some students can be a bit concerned about is that if they do share that on their UCAS, is that going to impact the application? But that's kept confidential, isn't
it? It's kept confidential completely. And it doesn't define you, it doesn't determine anything other than some codes in the background, and it does support the application process to some extent, but it doesn't affect anything to do with offers.
Yeah, gives you a good peace of mind, I guess, if you're listening to this and you're thinking it's important to share that information and access the support that's available to you. There's no negative that's going to come off that.
No negative connotations. It isn't going to affect an offer.
Yeah.
It's more statistical than anything else. Yeah. Data driven.
Yeah. When students are preparing for higher education, obviously we've said that they should sort of let their who they're applying to know about their potential disability. But is there anything else that you think they should be doing, maybe in preparation for that experience?
I think I'll always say the key thing is go with your gut instinct.
Mm.
Go visit universities, meet the people. I think when you do have an additional need or there is a disability there, often you can do a course wherever.
Mm.
Bradford, Leeds Beckett, Leeds, Huddersfield, they all offer similar courses. But when there's an extra side there, I think you need to reach out to services and go with what feels good for your gut.
Yeah.
Because overriding, you need to be able to manage everything else. So you can do a course anywhere, really.
Yeah, I guess it's like having confidence and feeling comfortable where you are is going to make a massive difference on how successful you are, I guess.
Definitely. And I would always say, you know, you need to look at the factors in your life, your support mechanisms that you have.
Yeah.
How far do you comfortably want to be away from them?
Yeah.
You know, maybe 50 miles tops. Parents can't always get down the motorway as easy at 2 o'clock in the morning. So sometimes choice is determined by that.
Yeah, so when these students are going to these open days and things, is there anything specific you think they should look out for? Is there sort of maybe specific elements to do with accommodation, the location, things like that?
Accommodation, location.
Yeah.
Accommodation's huge. I'll always say to anybody, you've got to live in this room potentially for a full year.
Yeah.
You're going to eat there, socialise, do a bit of study potentially, sleep. You've got to be happy in that environment, go look at the accommodation, because yeah. that can be make or break.
Make sure it has all like the accessibility needs, if that's what you require.
Accessibility, like, but also in terms of the environment, is it going to be conducive to your mental health? Mm. Is it going to be a positive, happy environment to make you feel happy?
Yeah. Mm.
Because otherwise, if it's not, it probably isn't the right place for you.
Yeah.
And we need to manage positive mental health, and where you live is a big part of that.
Definitely. I think something we've spoken about on this podcast before is, and most people that come on say that one of the most important things about any element of higher education is doing your research.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to here. And normally we're sort of saying, do your research in terms of what you can access in student finance, or do your research in terms of if that course right for you. Whereas actually for some of these learners, it's probably the research is more important into, are you going to feel comfortable there? Yeah. Are you going to be able to sort of succeed there? And
I think so. And I think the finance, all of those are very, very important. But parents, carers, friends, they can help you with all of that and make it less scary.
Yeah.
Universities can sort of help you through that financial application process. But to look at how you feel inside and what you feel happy with in terms of the campus, the surroundings, the people that the tutors you're potentially going to be working with, the services, that you can only get a feel for that yourself.
Yeah.
I'm a great believer in as well, maybe go on your own without your parents. Mm. Don't have that added influence. Maybe go once with your parents, carers, but then go again and see it alone and make that informed choice yourself.
Get a real first-hand experience of what the actual support is like in that institution, I guess.
And accommodation for me is a huge part of that, and the services and what they're offering is.
Yeah, I guess on the flip side of that as well is you obviously have students that will go to university and they'll live there in halls and things like that. But you also have students that study either closer to home or maybe they'll go to a further education college that offers higher education. And I think sometimes with that, it's like looking at transport and things like that, what the transport links are like.
Transport links, definitely. How long is it going to take to get in? I have a student who has a diagnosis of autism. It takes him maybe an hour and 40 minutes to get in.
Mm.
And that's his choice, and it was his informed choice, but it was the pre-run. Look at all those things. How long is it going to take you? In the summer holidays, it's going to take you half the amount, so you need to do it in winter as well, when the nights draw in. You need to know what it feels like when the weather's miserable, and to see, can you manage that? What would you do as a plan B if your day wasn't so good?
Yeah.
How are you going to get home? How are you going to do that? So those little things are actually quite big things and need to be factored in.
Yeah.
And I'll always have that conversation with students, not to deter them from coming to Bradford, but it's just so that they make the right choice for themselves.
Yeah. I guess the one thing as well about support services is that they're very honest and they are what's best for you as a student. So when you, and this goes, I guess, for everyone, but when you access them, it's not a, there's no recruitment element to it. There's no, we're worried about your grades particularly to it. It's about them as a person, what's best for them, what makes them most comfortable and things like that. So it's the best place to get advice really as well.
Absolutely. And then we're looking at it could be the added needs that come, and many of that potentially will be mental health, and we need to support positive mental health. And those factors do have a potentially negative effect if it's not going in a good, positive, conducive way.
Mm.
So we need to be able to support that. So I like to be honest from the offset. Is it right for you? Have you looked at this? Have you done that? So that they don't go in feeling that there's pressure elsewhere for them to go to a certain place.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be there 3-4 years, haven't you?
Definitely.
You've got to enjoy the experience. Yeah.
So some students obviously come into the university already aware of any special adjustments that they might need, but some students might not be aware how to best help themselves. So coming to an advice centre might help give them that advice.
Definitely.
So even if you're not really sure exactly what you need, but having these conversations, for example, like, oh, I need to think about transport, could be really, really helpful.
Really helpful. But and then also in terms of their own needs to access campus or the academic side, come and speak to the service, try and apply for disabled student allowance early. They will then look at what do we need, what adjustments need to be in place in terms of equipment or in terms of maybe support hours to be able to allow you to access your studies effectively.
Yeah, you basically mentioned lots of different forms of support there. So you mentioned the disabled student's allowance.
Yep.
Do you think you can tell us a little bit more about that?
So disabled student allowance, known as DSA, is a government fund which is... it sits alongside your Student Finance England account, so you can apply at the same time. It's not means tested, so it doesn't look at financial income. It doesn't affect any benefits that are coming in, and it isn't. It's non-repayable, so it's a grant. You don't pay anything back.
Yeah, you keep the money forever. Yeah.
Well, you don't get money basically. Yeah. It's gift. It's not gifts. It's services and equipment basically. So there's no monetary value as such. You're not given any money. It's and what you would do is you apply for it. You upload any evidence that they're asking for. DSA have their own criteria, so it's good to look at their website to see what evidence they'll accept. Could be GP letters, could be diagnostic information from specific learning difficulties, and they will review that, accept it. You go to an independent needs assessor who's independent to the university, independent to DSA, who will then evaluate your needs and make recommendations.
Right.
So it could be a laptop, it could be assistive technology, could be a sighted guide, could be a note taker, could be a specialist mentor. It could be a study coach. It really depends on that individual. Could be ergonomic equipment in terms of seating to have at home, all of those different things. They then make those recommendations and the DSA pay for it all, basically.
Wow.
And that allowance follows you throughout university. You don't reapply unless there's specific circumstances. So say you started in Bradford, doing psychology as an undergraduate, you then decided you wanted to go to Plymouth and do sociology.
Yeah.
You would probably need to be reassessed then because you're doing a different course at a different institution. But they're quite few and far between. If you stay on the same course at a different institution, they'll keep the DSA running.
Yeah.
So it's only when you go from undergraduate to postgraduate, really, that will they ask you to come in again. But so this package follows you as an individual. So if you'd applied as Bradford as your firm choice, but you didn't get in, you needed to go in by a clearing, so you decide to go to Bradford College instead, your DSA package follows you as an individual to any institution.
That's so helpful.
Yeah,
so
really helpful.
It's your package that supports you, and so it doesn't matter if you thought you were going to go somewhere else, it will follow you regardless.
Yeah.
And it can be re-evaluated if you need to change, if you get a different diagnosis. It's a very fluid process. I would say the support is amazing. There is a cap of something, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, but we're looking at quite a large cap that doesn't it isn't normally exceeded unless you've got specific conditions, such as maybe hearing, and maybe if you use a BSL, British Sign Language Interpreter, you will go over that, but you don't need to worry because the university then has an obligation to fund that. But the best thing to do is speak to Disability Advice, Disability Services, the inclusion team, whoever it is, the SEND team, and they can guide you through that process and support you, because it's at times it can be a bit overwhelming because people don't know what they need to do.
Exactly. So going to the advice centre, they would support you to access all this amazing help that you can get.
It is amazing. It is a really good package, and it can be a game changer for some students because it means that it levels the playing field and so that students aren't disadvantaged, and they've got more, they're able to have or feel that they're included in the environment, they can access that learning, and they're not disadvantaged in relation to peers, basically. So it is really good.
Is that something that they'll apply for once they've started?
No,
you
apply as soon as you start for student finance. So the closing date for new applicants has probably, was it Friday? So basically you can apply from any point. I would always say try and do it now as opposed to September, because everyone's applying in September,
yeah,
and the lead times get bigger. They can be 14 weeks, whereas do it now, you can have it done in 4 weeks because they're quieter.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you know, if you know...
Save yourself 10 weeks. Yeah,
exactly. If you know what your needs are and you're being you can get it done and everything in place in September. I've already got one student who I've already met with and his is all in place, all sorted, all done for September.
Yeah.
If he doesn't come here, it will follow him to a different institution.
Mm-hmm.
It's really useful that you're meeting with students who are potentially looking to come here, sort of way down the line, but they can still come to you and get that advice and support before they even... Even on the record sort of thing.
I've been meeting with one student and his parents for over a year now due to the knee, his condition. He's got muscular dystrophy, and so it means that he's got very specific needs, and so we've been working together for this will be our second year now to make sure that everything's in place for September.
So impressive that there's so much
opened
support.
Our policy.
Definitely. And I think it's so, like, across all of the institutions. I know I, for personally, at Kirklees College, I'm sure Leanne will say the same at Leeds Arts University. Across the board, all the institutions all offer sort of very similar sort of options to these two students. And I know, Leanne, you said you met with some people from your institution.
Yes, so I met with our disability advice team in Leeds Arts University just to kind of get to understand the process a little bit more and the different things that they offer to support students.
And it'll be very much the same as here.
Yes, and the thing that kind of really stuck out to me, and it's highlighted about your saying as well, is that it's so individualised.
It is.
Because every single individual has different needs and they need different things, therefore the support is different. So it's so good to see that it's so tailored to the individual.
Absolutely.
So you were mentioning all the different kinds of the support, and one of them was the disability student allowance.
Yeah.
But you offer loads of different things, ranging from financial support all the way to academic support as well.
Yeah.
So I guess it helps every single part of the process of being in higher education.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll probably need to outline is that universities and HEs are slightly different to, say, FE and high school. And I know we're not talking about high school, but some students will be used to how they were accommodated at high school, and they would have one SENCO who would sort everything out for them, and they might go to student services once in a while for bursaries and whatnot. At universities, it's very much every service does its own thing. It has a specialism, it sticks to that specialism, and then you signpost to the different areas. So I would say to any student to be mindful of that. Probably your key person's going to be your disability advisor, and they will go up and over and beyond to support you and reach out and signpost and help you with all of that. But it's a different mindset that you've got to I like to make students aware of, because it can become slightly frustrating at times, and you just need to be forearmed with that information to say that person isn't brushing you off, that it's their specialism, and I couldn't talk about Student Finance England and help you apply,
because
that isn't my area of specialism, nor is another area for another person. So it's very much signpost to the appropriate person, and it's just a different mindset.
I think I've had talk conversations with people before, and they've said that one of the big differences as well is that students are coming from an environment where people go to them to offer them support. It's now up to you. Like, as you've said before, that you're 18, you're an adult moving into this sort of new world, whether you're studying. And it's on you to go. That support is available to you, and there is loads of it, but you've got to be proactive in going and finding that support as well. So.
And you need to be mindful as well that if you want a parent, carer, or another representative to support you through the process, you need to give explicit and express permission to do so. Universities can't deal with a third party unless there is permission to do so. And that is very much it can be a bit of an eye-opener for some students. I'm happy to deal with parents, carers. I have a big caseload of them, in fact. They seem to come to me, but I do need permission from the student, because in essence, they've got to be in charge and they need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And I guess that's almost, because I guess we have parents and carers that listen to this podcast as well.
Yeah.
Whereas it's quite scary, I guess, if you're a parent carer, that your child or sort of person you're caring for is looking at going on to this, sort of this journey, starting this journey. You've probably spent a really long time sort of looking after them and protecting them and worrying about them. And actually, this is a time where they sort of do have to start to sort of move forward on their own a little bit, and it's their journey, and they can't maybe be as involved as maybe they once were.
Mm.
And it's, yeah, I guess it's like...
It's a transition process for both of them, really, and maybe there still has to be that element of hand-holding, supportiveness, but there comes a time where some students then decide they do want to let go and will go through that process with them, but other students will have a representative with them throughout the process, just because it helps alleviate any anxiety, any level of overburden, frustration. As we say, each individual is different, and associated difficulties can then be exacerbated by this level of frustration, because they don't always want to be dealing with that. So we just have to look case by case.
Yeah, that's what it all keeps coming back to, isn't it?
Yeah, in essence, you are an adult, so you've got to give that permission.
Yeah, I imagine it's empowering as well, even though it's a difficult transition, but to make that choice.
Definitely.
Do I want to involve someone else, and to what degree? You know, I get to choose, I'm an adult, and that could be really helpful, I think, moving forward, even beyond your university years.
Absolutely, and it does, it gives you a level of empowerment, but also that level of independence, and enables you to then move that transition into employment as well.
That's a really good point.
We are looking to develop skill sets for employability, and this is the crossing, bridging point, so it does help bridge that as well.
Yeah, I was wondering whether you offer any support to help people get a diagnosis, for example, and how would you go about doing that?
So the main diagnosis that are offered for most universities is what's called specific learning difficulties. It's an umbrella term for dyslexia, dyscalculia, math-related difficulties, attention-related difficulties. So there's Tourette's. So it fits within the specific learning difficulty umbrella. And so a university can fund you through the dyslexia diagnosis. No university really can offer you an ADHD diagnosis, which is a clinical diagnosis. They can offer you a diagnostic interpretation of characteristics. So it then becomes quite tricky, and we have to explain that to individual students. Other universities such as Leeds Beckett offer you money and assistance towards getting a private diagnosis of ADHD or an autism diagnosis. We're looking to go down that process with disability advice, hopefully. We've got a new manager in place who's looking to do that, so we can help towards those different processes. But really, each university has its own protocols, and it is best to check. Because if you're driven by that, you're probably best checking beforehand. But all universities will offer a specific learning difficulty diagnosis or a means to get one.
Yeah, which could be really helpful if you kind of always feel like I have more special needs, or I need some adjustment. So I guess it helps to know what you're working with, so you can then get the help that you need.
Well, I suppose general rule of thumb, there's about 1 in 12 individuals who will have a diagnosis of dyslexia, for instance, but only 4 of them have a diagnosis. To get a diagnosis at high school, college is nigh on impossible. And so the government have put in a lot of money in terms of higher education institutions offering that diagnosis. Quite contentious, because from my point of view, I actually think it should be done at primary school, because how are you going to get to university? That's another issue. But so it's to lessen that gap, basically, and to enable students to have that level playing field and to not be disadvantaged. And so SPLD, specific learning difficulties, are a huge part of that. Massive.
Something else, I guess, that carries on from looking at sort of students that are in school or in college is the education, health and care plan. So that's something that people that might be listening to this might be familiar with. Is that something they can then carry on with them across into higher education?
Not at all. No. No, it goes through and it's quite firm with that. And say a student, to get an education, a health and care plan is quite hard to begin with. Mm. And it only carries you through education to FE level,
yeah,
to 21. Now, it ceases. It has to cease. You have to go through the formal ceasing process. Yeah. And you have to do that with school and also with the local authority. Okay. And it's a very formal process. It doesn't follow you to university. You then have to apply for disabled students. So all students would apply for disabled student allowance, yeah, DSA, and educational health and care plans can act as evidence for DSA, okay, if it has a diagnosis on it, if there is a label, for want of a better term. But it does not follow you to HE, and that is probably, yeah, another contentious thing. Some students don't realise that.
Yeah.
I had one student a few years ago come. FE had all the support given to him that he needed, and he assumed that it would continue.
Just hand that over and carry on.
And he got very overwhelmed and, yeah, very upset because he did not know that he had to do a different thing. So I would always say,
I suppose that's an important thing that maybe not many people are aware of.
Yeah.
I guess you can take the information from that document.
Definitely.
And use
excellent
that for your application into your...
But the funding that surrounds it and the package that surrounds that individual it ceases.
Yeah.
And that's the official term. Quite formal.
Yeah. Feels quite sharp.
Yeah. And so for some students, they'll go on to then... be allocated a social worker,
yeah,
who remains with you whilst you're at university, but that just depends on what condition, the conditions that came out of the ceasing of the EHCP, whether or not you're eligible for PIPs. So it becomes quite complicated. So you need to look at that maybe a year before you're planning on going to university,
yeah,
because it's a very slow process.
Yeah, I guess that's another one of those things where, I mean, one, I'm glad we spoke about it because people are going to learn about this maybe for the first time and sort of get way ahead of that. Is that something that members of staff in schools and colleges will be telling, like, will be helping students with that early on, or is that something that
they should be? Unfortunately, there does tend to be a lack of knowledge really about how the EHCP stops, and then how a student then takes a different package to university. Yeah. And for me, that's all about transition.
Yeah. Mm.
And transition can be quite lacking sometimes.
Yeah.
And I feel that all HE institutions need to become more open to transition,
going
into high schools, being more proactive into FE colleges, to be able to spread the word that it's slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, and it comes back to the sort of the research element of it, doesn't it? That these are the questions that I guess you need to ask when you're... And maybe students after listening to this now knowing that they can go to universities way ahead of time and ask
these
questions.
Important questions for them.
That might be quite almost relaxing, rather than thinking, okay, now I've got to apply for UCAS and maybe now I can ask an open day or something. You've got loads of time actually where you can sort of prepare for that a bit more,
which is
really positive. Yeah. Another phrase that I'd heard of is masking.
Yeah.
Could you explain what that is, and is it something that students should be worried about?
Well, I don't think any student should be worried about anything, but masking comes with individuals who have a propensity to camouflage, really.
Mm.
And in some respects, it's almost like hiding certain aspects of themselves to be able to function, to be able to cope, to be able to manage, to be able to get through social situations, to be able to almost camouflage that they're having a good day at that moment in time when in fact maybe they're not.
Yeah.
Statistics say girls are better maskers than boys, but boys do it. Invariably, maybe potentially those on the neurodiverse continuum would potentially be masking, and it comes from primary school. So what you would say is that parents often say when their child was at primary school, the teachers would say they're all smiley, all happy, nothing's wrong, and they get home and they explode because it's that level of projection on the people you feel comfortable with and safe, because your home is usually your safe environment, so you're able to explode, be back to normal, and then you contain yourself, back for school, happy smiley face, I'm happy, me again.
Yeah.
And it's almost, it's hiding this aspect of you that sometimes you don't feel comfortable, you feel anxious, you feel unhappy, you feel uncertain. And the difficulty with masking is it's tiring. It's ever-consuming. It takes over your life.
Yeah, and it
really overburdens the brain. When the brain's overburdened, what happens is the anxiety kicks in. Anxiety kicks in. If it spirals, it then becomes depression. So they're all very much interlaced. And then with that, then there are other prevalence rates of suicidal ideation. There's self-harm, substance abuse that can be linked to all of that because it's a release mechanism. So to be able to deal with the day that you've had, you could potentially then self-harm. So for me, it is not... It's a strategy that someone's used to cope, but you need to be able to discuss and talk why that individual has to use that mechanism to feel socially accepted. So it's not, in essence, it isn't nice.
It sounds like it's something that people who work within higher education providers, they should be sort of aware of that and sort of be able to maybe look for signs of that so that they can be well equipped to support students. And people like yourself who work in these teams are there for that reason and there to help with that.
Because I will always say, if I get a student that comes in with me with a clinical diagnosis of maybe ADHD, clinical meaning that it's had a formal diagnosis through through the GP referral, and a person with ADHD will invariably mask. And they will mask the difficulties they're experiencing. And a big giveaway is cuticle picking. Massive giveaway. Picking lips, biting lips, because when that individual feels uncomfortable, they'll start doing that and it manifests with that. So if I have a student that's doing that, then that'll be a discussion area and we'll talk about it. And then I'll be able to think, right, are there any trigger factors that are now making me feel that this individual could potentially be vulnerable, and then what do we need to do? So it's a case of having those comfortable, open conversations. And I would say the disability and mental health teams are those who are most well equipped to offer that support and advice.
Definitely.
So I really hear what you're saying is it makes such a huge difference to allow yourself to show your true feelings. And just by allowing yourself to be comfortable, it could be a great help.
Absolutely.
So going to someone who really understands, like the mental health team or the advice team, disability advice team, could help you connect with yourself and therefore ease those anxieties.
Absolutely. And it's a case of just being hurt. I had a student the other day who said, I actually feel validated, I feel heard. And it's that level of understanding that people are able to accept that individual, any foibles or flaws that they that might be self-perceived, and it's that discussion, and it's helping them manage it with useful strategies. So if we link that back to disabled student allowance, if you had a specialist mentor, the specialist mentor would help be helping you with positive daily strategies to support that. So that's how it all starts to link in then.
No, that's it's all so interesting, isn't it? There's so much that so much we've covered here, and we've been talking for like 40 minutes. But I guess really is like sort of a combination of that is that there's sort of four stages to applying to HE, and you've got your decision making, your communicating, your transition, and then you're supported. So I feel like we took a lot of information from the Disabled Learners Transition Pack that Go High West Yorkshire created last year. And that sort of focuses on those four stages, but it also really says that there is support available all of those stages. At every stage you're at, there is someone, whether it's information online, and there's sort of so many disability services with different web pages, whether it's through the government or different charities, whether it's through sort of the institutions themselves, no matter where you're applying. And that's through, that gets us to the communication stage where you can contact that institution.
And just before I forget, in terms of EHCP ceasing, a really good charity to help you through that process if you're experiencing any difficulties is Sendeas. Because they're an impartial charity linked to Barnardo's. I've had to use them before to support students. And I don't normally plug charities, but I know the EHCP ceasing process can be difficult. as an HE institution, we're not supposed to support that.
Right.
I have, and I shouldn't. So
we're on bias here. We can do what we want.
This so is, if there were difficulties, I'd always say go to CMDS. Yeah.
We'll make sure to pop the link in the description for the episode, mm-hmm. And then we'll also pop in there the link to the Disabled Learners Transition Pack as well, because that's a really useful tool for any student that's sort of looking to go on. And even like sort of that supporting stage is. Whether it's teachers in your new institution or even in your previous institution, there's still people around to support you.
Definitely, there'll always be someone, whether it be a pastoral tutor, whether it be a counsellor, whether it be an academic at this university, and there'll always be someone who will have an interest to be able to support you and bridge that understanding, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's a collaborative process for everyone.
Yeah, it is. There's so many different elements involved, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of all comes together to provide the best experience. I feel like we've covered a lot of sort of in-depth subjects.
Yeah.
So I guess I hope it's been really useful to people that are listening.
I hope so.
we all hope so. Every episode I'm like, is this good? I hope that's really useful. And if you do need support, then please do reach out to people. Please sort of tell people about sort of what support you need and how you're feeling. There's I know maybe you don't, but we'll say there's loads of charities out there. Please look for support, and obviously a lot of these things can lead to sort of mental health issues and things like that. There's loads of support out there for that as well, so please do talk to someone, and if you need any support, reach out for it, because there's so many kind and caring people out there that want to help them and support you, and that is their job. It's their calling in life. And you've been doing this for 17 years, and that's because it's like it's a passion. You want to help people.
Absolutely.
People like us, we want to do that. So reach out. But before we wrap up and finish, I was just hoping if you could go through maybe just like a couple of the biggest worries that you've had that students have come to you with, and maybe it can be the most common ones, or it can be sort of like the obscure ones, something that maybe students on who are listening to this are thinking of right now that they're worried about. And then I guess if you can sort of counteract that with how you help them with that situation or how you help someone manage that situation, that would be amazing.
Gosh, there's been loads. We've probably covered a lot as well. Yeah. I think a big one is the EHCP ceasing. And I have helped students in the past. One specifically, I worked with her and her mother to go through the process. It meant I had to get involved with the council, the local LEA and CNDS to get that process started. Really pleased to say she's actually a student ambassador as well now.
Wow.
She's thriving.
Wow.
She's brilliant.
That's amazing.
It was a difficult process. We really thought she wouldn't get to university. So little incidents like that make it really rewarding, just to see that a student is here, they're achieving, they're having a great experience, and they're enjoying university life as well. Because for me, it isn't all about just studying. It's about meeting like-minded people, reaching out to the clubs, UBU, all the unions, fantastic. Just don't. There are some students as well that worry about loneliness and being on their own and not making friends. And look out to the different support groups at university. Get in touch with the union to see if there are any groups that support your interests, so that, and just don't be alone. Speak to someone about it, so that someone there can support you. There's so many experiences that I've had. My brain's gone blank.
Yeah, no, it happens a lot. We normally ask people for top tips, and that is also
top tips apply. That's
the biggest one.
Yeah, and hook in with disabilities early.
I guess we've covered your top tips. Is just everything we've spoken about,
that's
really.
But that's
your top one. Apply for DSA early.
And
reach out.
Don't be alone. Don't be afraid to speak to someone. It can be a scary thing being on your own. Just reach out, because you will have an amazing experience. That's what you were destined to do. We need to put the support in place for you, because for me it's making anybody a confident, resilient learner. And how are we going to do that for you?
Thank you so much,
Paula,
for joining us and talking through this with us.
It's a
super important subject.
Definitely.
And we hope that this episode is sort of managed to help some people find some answers. We're actually going to be talking to some student ambassadors who have been through the process and probably been on the other side of what you've experienced, of your sort of offering it. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this first part of the Go High West Yorkshire UniConnect podcast. A lot of the things that we talk about has been researched by ourselves before we started, and both me and Leanne used the Disabled Learners Transition Pack that was created by some of our partners at Go High West Yorkshire. It's a really, really useful resource for people that are looking to go on to study at higher education, and we'll make sure that we put the link in the description below. Next time, we're going to be talking to some student ambassadors who are from a disabled background, and we're going to hear about sort of their challenges and their journey through the higher education system. So tune into the next episode for that. Thank you so much to Leanne and for Paola for being here with me. And thank you to you for listening. See you later.